The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, Canada, get going. It is Wednesday. It is in the year of our Lord, July 13th, and there's a lot going on out there. First round of voting in the race to succeed Boris Johnson as Prime Minister of Great Britain gets underway at noon today, East Coast time. 8:30 today, East Coast time. 8:30 today, East Coast time. About 10:30 today, East Coast time. Results will be in. Inflation data will come out during the show, and I will let you know what the inflation data is. Experts are predicting 8.8%. Anything under that is good. 8.8, of course, is terrible. And we'll keep you posted on that news as it goes along. The U.S. military killed the senior ISIS leader in Syria yesterday with a drone strike. Props to the military, props to President Biden for okaying it. Credit where credit is due. Another bad guy bites the dust. The president spoke about yesterday how great the economy was. I just got to fact check this, please. Cut number one, Joe Biden in the Oval with the president of Mexico.
I might note, of all the major economies in the world, we are the fastest growing. We, the United States, already the fastest growing.
De todas las economías grandes del mundo, Estados Unidos es la que está creciendo más rápidamente.
Just since I became president, we've created more jobs than any president ever has in the beginning of his administration. Almost 8.5 million new jobs.
Desde que asumí como presidente, hemos generado más puestos de trabajo que los que ha generado cualquier otro gobierno. Y hemos generado 8.5 millones de nuevos puestos de trabajo.
Wages have risen 5.5%.
Los sueldos han aumentado 5.2%.
We are suffering from inflation imposed as a consequence of what's going on in Ukraine, but we have the lowest rate of almost every major nation in the world.
All right, stop right there. This is, you can't fact check a president in real time when he's talking to the head of state. The press can't break in and say, Mr. President, that's not true. We do not have the fastest growth. In Q1, our economy shrunk by 1.6%. And in Q1, the growth in Germany was plus 0.2%. In the United Kingdom, was plus 0.8%. In Canada, it was plus 0.8%. In Australia, it was plus 0.8%. Heck, in Mexico, it was up 1%. In Q1, we were down 1.6%. As for the inflation number, when he said, we got the lowest inflation in the major world, that's a lie, too. The U.S. has, at current, 8.6%. The number will change a little bit later, year over year, today. Expected to go up to 8.8. And there are some countries worse off than us. The United Kingdom has 9.1%. But remember, we've got negative growth. They've got positive growth in the United Kingdom. In Spain, it's 10.2%. Turkey is 78%. Okay, so we take Turkey off the board. They're a broken economy. However, inflation in Italy is at 8%. In Mexico, it's at 8%, you know, 0.5% lower than in the United States. The Mexican president knows this. In Canada, it's 7.7%. It's 1% lower than us. In Germany, it's 7.6%. In India, it's 7.01%. In South Korea, it's 6%. In France, it's 5.8%. In Australia, it's 5%. So the president just lied in the Oval Office to the Mexican president, who, of course, knows the real numbers. I think the guy has lost it. He's reading a card, and his staff does not blink at having him lie. It's just kind of amazing. Other New York Times story. So remember, if you want to be braced against inflation, HughGold.com or text Hugh to 989898. And if it comes out at 8.8 today, buy some gold. New York Times. As six COVID wave hits, many New Yorkers shrug it off. Of course they do. How do we were alarmed when it was alarming. We were alarmed during the first wave and during Delta. Then we figured out that Omicron is far more transmissible and not nearly as deadly. And we stopped wearing masks. And many of us, and I still urge you to get vaccinated and boosted. And when they come out with a new booster, I'll go and get that because I don't want to get sick. And lots of people have had COVID in my life in the last month. I mean, like half. And they have a bad cold. So B.5, it's just diluted. It's down in its lethality. It's up in its transmissibility. And New Yorkers are treating it like the flu and like a cold. And no matter how many people yell at us to do something differently, we're not changing our mind. We know what it is. I was alarmed when it was alarming. I am passé because it's now passé. The Justice Department announces a task force to fight overreach on abortion bans. Let me tell you this. The reason that Dobbs exists is because the reason that Roe is overturned and Casey is overturned is because the extremist attacked a Mississippi law limiting abortion to 15 weeks or earlier. So I am glad to see the Justice Department is going to send up more cases to this Supreme Court that will have the Supreme Court expand Dobbs. Liz Cheney, Congresswoman Cheney, she is a friend of mine. I don't talk about this much because there's no news in the Nancy Pelosi 1-6 committee. But yesterday, Congresswoman Cheney said at the end of the hearing, which I did not watch and about which there is no news, there was no news yesterday. Everything, I've read every story, everything in there was already known. It's the same old, same old. And so there's no news, but an attempt to boost ratings for their last hearing, which I think is tomorrow night, Congresswoman Cheney said that the committee had been told that Donald Trump reached out to a witness and the committee informed the Department of Justice. And she says that person declined to answer or respond to President Trump's call. Quote, let me say one more time, we will take any effort to influence witness testimony very seriously. All right. You cannot tamper with a witness before Congress. You can't. It's a hearing. It's not a judicial proceeding. You can call them up. You can call them during the hearing if they want to pick up. They're under oath. They can't lie. But I can call them. You can call them. There is no tampering possible. There's an obstruction of justice if you're trying to get the witness to participate in an ongoing conspiracy. But calling a witness is not tampering, is not influencing, is not interfering, is not illegal. I don't like misinformation, even when it comes from friends. She didn't say tampering. Many of my dopey friends in the legacy media immediately can go, oh, that's something's bad here. Something. President, the former president, the next president can call any witness at any time, provided they do not ask that witness to engage in an ongoing conspiracy and lie. That just unbelievable. Okay, we're all marveling at the NASA telescope. That's great. That's a one-day story. And it will be a decade and a century of research. But honestly, do any of you understand what it means? It means that there was a Big Bang that created an infinite and a complex and expanding universe. There was a beginning. All right, we've known this for years, but what this confirms over and over again, if you do not believe in the argument by design that Aquinas put forward, you should now. This is not random. That's what those pictures tell me. Sri Lanka's president fled. His family's controlled that nation for 20 years. Freedom is coming to Sri Lanka. More after the break. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Hi, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. I am Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway, joined by Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Hugh. Good to have you back inside the actual swamp. You
know,
before all the influence peddling and grifting.
I've got to get back out of the swamp soon because last night's storm was an indication of what's going on. I'm going to talk about the Senate Judiciary Committee in a moment. But first, clear after I've checked my records. We had our 22nd anniversary of this nationally syndicated radio show on Monday, which is also the day after the 40th anniversary of the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt saying yes to me in getting married. And you have been, I believe, the most frequent appearing guest who is an elected official for 11 years now. You've been making a near weekly appearance on the Hugh Hewitt Show. So I think that means you've talked to Dwayne more than anybody in the world except Adam and me.
Well, I appreciate, Hugh, your generosity in having me on. I guess it started 11 years ago this summer during my first campaign for the House. I'm grateful for your willingness to have me on the show to speak to your big audience, to include your listeners in Arkansas. I just wonder, you know, if after having a misspent youth, I'm also having a misspent adulthood coming up your show so much.
Last night I did an event with Governor and Mrs. Youngkin in front of a crowd that included a member of your staff, and it's off the record, so I won't talk about it. But I got to say, I know you campaigned hard for him. He's quite a remarkable leader, and the Republican bench is deep and wide. And any thought cross your mind you might be across the debate stage from Glenn Youngkin in the near term?
Well, Hugh, I don't know about that. I think you're referring to the 2024 election, and as my drill sergeant always told us, keep your eye on the 25-meter target, which right now is the 2022 election. But I'm extremely grateful that the people of Virginia elected Glenn Youngkin last year. Anna and I are friends with Glenn and Suzanne. They're a wonderful couple. He's a great leader for Virginia, a great, decent Christian man. And the people of the Commonwealth of Virginia couldn't be more fortunate to have such a good conservative leader as Glenn Youngkin.
Now, the reason I bring this up, I want to cover two things with you. One, the extraordinary hearing in Senate Judiciary yesterday on abortion. I think the reason Governor Youngkin won is that Virginia's parents, they're usually apolitical, centrist parents, are disgusted with woke ideology. They don't want it. And he spoke about it last night. Chatham House rules, can't mention it. But I wonder whether or not you think that exchange and your exchange and the entire hearing yesterday with the Berkeley law professor and the other witnesses underlines for America just how crazy academia has become.
Yeah, that hearing was something else. I don't think it went quite the way the Democrats had hoped, Hugh. You had three Democratic witnesses who were defending abortion up to the moment of birth. You know, I asked them if they condemned the violence against crisis pregnancy centers and the mobs that are protesting outside the homes of Supreme Court justices in violation of federal law. A Democratic hitman even tried to kill Brett Kavanaugh. And while they all said they condemned that, they also insisted that we have to recognize that a forced pregnancy is violence as well. No reports from them on whether late-term partial birth abortion is violence against an unborn baby. You know, they all started their testimony by offering their pronouns. And one in particular never retreated from the grounds that we are here to talk not about women's rights, but about persons who are capable of becoming pregnant. It just sounds to normal Americans like people speaking a different language. And that's one reason why the Democratic Party is so out of touch with normal Americans. And as you say, that's one reason why Glenn made big inroads in the Northern Virginia suburbs, typically pretty Democratic areas, is you had schools there shut down for a year and a half. And the only silver lining of all of the suffering inflicted on his kids is parents were able to see the kind of nonsense and left-wing drivel being indoctrinated into their kids. And they didn't want it, and they wanted to change, and that's why they elected Glenn Youngkin in part.
I think we are at peak woke. It now begins to destroy itself because it's on display, and that's my proposition. I'm sticking to it. Do you agree with me that if Democrats refuse to say that women are women and men are men and only women can have babies, that they will suffer at the polls because Americans are not in to the hard left ideology of it's called critical legal studies. And you came out of its birthplace, Harvard Law School, and see critical legal studies became critical race theory, became critical birth theory. It's just crazy.
It is crazy, Hugh, and I can't say if we're at peak woke or not. That's really not in our hands. It's in the hands of the Democrats, whether or not they want to start sounding like normal people again and defending the interest of normal people. Because remember, Hugh, it's not just saying silly things like persons who are capable of becoming pregnant. It's also neglecting the priorities of working-class Americans in favor of their abstract academic concerns. Those things are $5 a gallon gas, or grocery costs that are through the roof, moms not being able to get formula for their babies, skyrocketing crime, an open border. That's what most Americans are worried about these days. They're not worried about whether we are disrespecting persons who are capable of becoming pregnant by calling them women. They're not worried about whether or not one or two men who identify as women get to compete against girls. They're worried about whether their girls get a fair shot to compete and succeed in sports and those kind of issues. I mean, just look, Hugh, at the gains we've made in the 2020 election and all the special elections since then. I predict we'll make this fall among Latino voters. Apparently, the biggest priority among Democrats is whether they get called Latino or Latinx or Latinx or however you pronounce that ridiculous word they came up with, a word by which, by the way, virtually no Latino has ever heard or wants to be called. But these are the priorities of the Democrats, not the working class Americans' priorities.
It's the coercion of the vast majority of Americans into an obligatory left speak. Senator, I have a new column in The Washington Post today. It's the third and final column in three that I've written about West Virginia versus EPA. Probably, I know Dobbs matters, the gun case matters, the religious freedom case matters. But West Virginia versus EPA, which is a 6-3 vote in favor of tossing out the clean air regs that Joe Biden is making up, like President Obama made him up, without authority. And the Supreme Court said, if you want to regulate, you've got to have a writ from Congress. Now, I want big tech regulated. Do you think it is best to invest one of the existing agencies with that authority or to stand up a new agency with a very precise definition of what they should do?
Well, first, I want to say I agree that West Virginia, the EPA, is a huge case for the American people and for the cause of their self-government. These unelected bureaucrats, little Wilsonian scolds like Tony Fauci, think that they can find dusty corners of laws that go back 50 or 75 years that give them authority to regulate vast swaths of our economy and our private lives. It's absurd. I mean, in West Virginia, the EPA was claiming the ability under a 50-year-old law to regulate the entire power generation industry in America, as opposed to this or that power plant, which may have issues with its emissions. Obviously, Congress didn't intend that when they passed the Clean Air Act. But it's just like the powers that Tony Fauci and the CDC claim that they're trying to impose an eviction moratorium nationwide last summer. The Supreme Court simply said, if these bureaucrats want to exercise such sweeping powers, they have to have the clear authorization of Congress to do so. Now, on the question about big tech, I, for one, don't think it's a good idea to empower these bureaucrats with more discretion. That's one reason why I have not sponsored some of the bills that would do so, because I don't want Joe Biden's left-wing, politically correct bureaucrats making those decisions. I think what will result is even more censorship of conservative voices. What Congress could do is adopt some very clear bright-line laws, like I propose to do. For instance, once these tech companies get to a certain size, they simply can no longer grow by acquisition. It would simply block mergers and acquisitions. There's no discretion there. It's a very simple test. I think that would be a better approach than empowering people like Lena Khan at the Federal Trade Commission to impose their far-left ideology under the pretext of economic regulation.
Now, Senator, let me follow up on that. I do not believe any existing agency has the authority to do anything significant with big tech, maybe other than the Department of Justice Antitrust Division. However, I am concerned about the national security implications of the technologies being developed in Silicon Valley and like-minded companies and like-mission companies across the United States being sold to our enemies. Maybe you empower the Department of Defense to control that. I know there are some agencies that do technology at Treasury, et cetera, but we got 1 minute. What do we do about the privacy of Americans and the security of Americans when it comes to big tech?
Well, Hugh, given some of the left-wing bureaucrats in charge of the Department of Defense under Joe Biden, I'm not sure we want to empower them either. Now, Congress has acted in this space, though, Hugh. Just a few years back, maybe 2018, 2019, we passed major reforms to foreign investment and export control laws. And we did empower something called the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States to scrutinize much more carefully Chinese investment into America, because oftentimes it flies under the radar. It's happening with very small startup companies. We have to stop China from stealing our best technology and using it against us.
We will return to this subject in the next 11 years of Senator Cotton's appearances. Thank you, Senator, for being a regular guest. We actually appreciate you a lot more than any other elected official because you've stuck with us through 11 years of pointed questionings, and that's great. Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas, member of the Judiciary Committee, Armed Services and Intel. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined now by Congressman Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin, of course. I can't ever remember which district he represents in Wisconsin. Good morning, Congressman.
The 8th, Hugh. The fighting 8th, the center of the republic.
And my goodness, I'm glad that you dressed up for the show today. You got the T-shirt on. That's really impressive.
Man of the people, Hugh. I have to work out at this. Some of us still work out, Hugh.
Senator Cotton had on a tie. I'm just saying, he had on a tie. Look, I want to ask you about the election cycle and the woke nature of Democrats. But first, I've got a column in The Washington Post this morning saying that West Virginia versus EPA. Now, you're a PhD, not a JD. So West Virginia versus EPA has got all the lawyers excited because it cabins the administrative state. Chief Justice, writing for Six, says, if Congress, Senate and House, haven't given an agent the authority to do something, they just can't make it up. I think this is big news because agencies have been making up for a long time. But it is also troubling news because big tech needs some shackles. They've got to stop selling our stuff to China. They have to stop stealing America's privacy data. What do we do about big tech? Because there is no agency presently authorized to regulate it.
Well, a few things stand out to me. One, you know, I'm sympathetic to the concerns over big tech bias and censorship, particularly of conservatives, as well as hypocrisy when it comes to China. I'm not persuaded, however, that repealing Section 230 would actually do what it's intended to do. In other words, if you make certain companies liable for the content posted on their platforms, I worry that that might actually produce more censorship, not less, as they try to immunize themselves from liability proactively. Point one. Point two, I think a better approach would be to enforce what's called neutrality in the stack. So think about it this way. Companies that are essentially the infrastructure of the internet, like Amazon Web Services, cannot and should not be allowed to discriminate in terms of providing their services just because they don't like that their customer could be a conservative, in the same way that your local electric utility could not deny you power because of your political beliefs. But contrast that with companies that exist on what's called the top of the stack, like Twitter or Facebook, who would be allowed to have whatever content moderation policy that they want, and individual customers or consumers can decide whether or not they want to use those platforms. Now, the obvious question is, well, there aren't a lot of choices, right? Because there just haven't been a lot of competitors, viable competitors, emerge to Facebook, Twitter. So you need a second thing, which is also mandatory data portability. So the basic idea is that you own your network and you can take it with you. You can export that network to whatever platform you want. I think enforcing neutrality in the stack combined with data portability would get the competition that we need in the tech industry without reducing our technological innovation and really get at the issue of censorship. So I do think there are some productive things we can do via a combination of legislation and deregulation.
Now, Congressman, that's not the basic thing. To me, the basic thing is who makes the rules for big tech. It's the Wild West right now. They can do whatever they want. And by the way, that was good for its incubation years. It is now mature, like the railroads became mature and the Interstate Commerce Commission resulted, which was necessary. I'm not saying this reg or that reg. I'm saying who should do it. And we can't rely on Congress because Congress can't get much done other than general agreement. So if you want to put in the Department of Defense to stop national security transfers, that's fine. Senator Cotton said there is a technology transfer authority already in Treasury. That's true. But I think we need, especially when it comes to individuals' data, which they simply lift and use and repurpose and sell, and your privacy, which is often violated, we need a new structure. Now, I'm willing to be argued out of that, but we just can't sit around and do nothing, can we? Congress can't sit around and do nothing.
We can't sit around and do nothing. I guess the tension, Hugh, and it one that gets to the core of the EPA decision, such as I understand it, West Virginia versus EPA, is do you risk Congress doing what it's done for decades, which the EPA decision is intended to reverse, which is outsource the job to an unelected agency that over time doesn't have real oversight, exceeds its mandate, and isn't held accountable. So whatever structure we put in place, we just need to make sure that there are clear lines of authority and a way to hold that accountable. When it comes to the Department of Defense, One construct that seems to make sense to me is that if you are a big tech company that wants to do business with the Department of Defense, let's say you want to provide cloud services for the Department of Defense, and indeed we've wasted 4 years awarding multi-cloud decisions because of internal infighting and Pentagon incompetence and other things, you then cannot go and simultaneously do business with the Chinese Communist Party or set up an AI center in Beijing or set up a variety of new businesses in China, which, owing to recent Chinese laws, basically make you a pawn of the Chinese Communist Party and make it likely that they're going to steal your sensitive data. And now they are going to force you to actually put Chinese Communist Party cells in your business structure in China. So basically forcing companies to choose which team they're on. Are they on America's side or are they with the Chinese Communist Party? Makes a lot of sense to me, as well as scrutiny in terms of the capital that continues to flow from America to China. So I do think there are ways for the Defense Department to play in the tech space. And as far as your question about some sort of new agency to regulate tech in general, I think it would depend entirely upon how you set that up and how you make it accountable.
And the reason I'm asking you, Congressman Gallagher, is you co-chaired with Senator Angus King of Maine, independent who caucuses with the Democrats, the Cyber Solarium. And Admiral Mark Montgomery was your executive director. And you understand that cyber is the new frontier in the second Cold War with China. What I'm worried about is West Virginia versus EPA does not forbid outsourcing. It's not a reversal of the non-delegation doctrine. It forbids freelancing. I mean, agencies can't make up the right to do any of this stuff. They have to have a specific set of instructions from the Congress. And right now, those instructions are few and far between. And I'd rather have the Armed Services Committees design this regulatory structure and decide who's going to be on it. So you get Mark Montgomery's and not Joe Bag of Donuts from a left-wing academia. I don't want the FTC doing this. The FTC has no authority to regulate big tech. And it's run by ideologues now. So I just think the Republicans have to start thinking about this. And you're one of the people that can't. Let's get to the Defense Authorization Act. Jim Inhofe yesterday, Senator from Oklahoma, tweeted that they got $45 billion extra bucks for DOD and that service members are going to get a 4.6% pay increase. Well, inflation numbers coming out next hour. It's going to be like 8.8%. So our military members are taking a pay cut, a real one, like 5%. What do you want that money? Are you going to be on the conference committee on the authorization bill? And where should the extra funding go in the opinion of Mike Gallagher?
I will be on the conference committee, or I should say it's likely that I'll be on the conference committee. The ranking member, Mike Rogers, will decide. Where do I want the extra money such as it exists to go? I think our highest priority has to be deterring a war with the Chinese Communist Party over Taiwan. Convincing them that any attempt to take Taiwan by force will fail, that we will deny that attempt in real time and thereby learn the lessons of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which is why I inserted a provision for a $1 billion fund for the Indo-Pacific focused squarely on the most urgent priorities that I'm hoping survives our debate today and getting into the early morning hours of tomorrow on the House floor. Today, it's my belief that we aren't moving fast enough. And so any marginal dollar we have, assuming that we're doing what we need to do to take care of our troops, I think needs to go to enhancing our deterrent posture in the Indo-Pacific in general and vis-a-vis Taiwan in particular. And we're not doing that. A final thing I'd say with specific regard to our manpower issues and pay, we have and something that the bill does not address that we're going to have to address over the next year. We have a looming recruitment crisis right now on our hands. None of the military services are meeting their recruiting goals right now. Now, that could be due to structural economic issues, right? There are plenty of high-paying jobs available in the private sector. But I think it's more than that, Hugh. I think it's connected to a few things that are uncomfortable to talk about. Controversies over the vaccine mandate and the Department of Defense refusal to consider natural immunity for service members, as well as just the increasing perception that the force has been politicized, that it's increasingly woke. We've seen the encroachment of dangerous diversity, equity, and inclusion bureaucrats into the Department of Defense. We've seen a lot of progressive priorities find their way into an organization that needs to be focused solely on warfighting And I think that is driving a lot of people away from the force at a time when we need people to be rushing to serve their country because threats are growing. That's something we need to confront. We don't do it fully in this bill, but that is an urgent problem that's only going to get worse if we don't address it over the next year.
Congressman, we got 2 minutes left. I want you to continue on that because the recruitment crisis is real. I think part of that is because they no longer advertise what skill set young men and women will obtain. For example, electricians and airplane mechanics and soldiers who know how to do the sort of things that business needs. They all transition very easily because they learn skill sets, whether they're 4-year enlistments or 8-year enlistments or they go 20, whatever it is. They get great skill set. But we are so busy talking about what they can't say and about controversies over who's getting tossed out because of the vaccine mandate and the Afghanistan debacle. Nobody wants to join that, Congressman. And they don't want to join an agency that's going to cut their pay every year because of inflation.
Basically, right as the Afghanistan debacle unfolded, the polling about public trust in institutions, which usually shows the military to be, you know, leagues ahead of any other institution, it dropped precipitously. So increasingly and troublingly, Americans don't have the same level of trust in the military, which is a huge problem. The other big factor, Hugh, that's not military specific, is just the health of the underlying population that the military draws from to recruit is getting worse and worse, such that a shocking number of adults age 17 to 34 are ineligible for service owing to a combination of obesity, mental health issues, and other factors. A massive, massive problems. And the military services, or at least the Army in particular, are lowering their standards. For example, the requirement to attain a high school degree in order to fix this. That's the wrong approach to this. We need to be increasing our standards at a time when we need people to be even more competent and smarter warfighters.
Congressman Mike Gallagher, good luck in the defense authorization bill today. That's very, very important debate, and I appreciate you joining me, and I hope you put on a tie for Congress today. I'm telling you, that's really the way Wisconsin
t-shirts.
Wants to be the t-shirt. Thank you, Congressman. Don't go anywhere, America. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America, to Hewitt. 9.1% inflation. We haven't seen that since I graduated from college in 1978. Alexander Kolodin is going to run for the Arizona State House to be part of the solution. Good morning, Alexander. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm glad. I want to talk to someone who's running for state representative because I talk to a lot of congressional candidates, Senate candidates, but what is it like on the ground running for a state house seat in Arizona right now? And tell people where your district is.
So our district is Anthem, New River, Cave Creek, North Scottsdale, Fountain Hills. So in the north and northeast parts of Maricopa County.
Okay. And so, Alex Kolodin, you've got a primary, then you've got a general. And what are people talking to you about as you knock on doors and go to breakfast meetings and all the kind of stuff that a state house rep has to do?
Exactly what you're talking about, Hugh. Inflation is an enormous issue, and it's an enormous issue around the country, but it's an even bigger issue where I live because the Phoenix metropolitan area is actually experiencing the highest rate of inflation of any major metropolitan area in the country. I think it's about 11% here running.
Wow.
And so it's on voters' minds when you've got gas prices that are $5.50, that tends to cut through the noise.
Now, when you run for office and what state district is it in Arizona, Alex? I don't know for sure what the number is.
Legislative District 3.
Okay, you're running for Legislative District 3, and you go into a breakfast meeting, and you say, can I take any questions? What do people ask you? Because this is really American politics 101, state house representative elections. What do they ask?
You know, I think a big problem is that people don't necessarily know what to ask. People don't know what state reps do. Obviously, election issues are still big here. You get a lot of questions about that. But for the most part, people are confused about what state reps do. And for a large extent, unfortunately, a lot of state reps use that to deflect responsibility. For example, to deflect responsibility to the federal government. And I always tell people, because I used to teach civics, you know, the state house actually has more power than any other part of the government, state or federal. That's how the founding fathers intended it. So we can do a lot of stuff that you never thought of. So, for example, you know, voters will always complain about the gas prices and inflation, just like we talked about. And of course, say it's Joe Biden's fault. And I say, you're absolutely right. It's Joe Biden's fault. But that doesn't mean that there's nothing that the state legislature can do about it. And I use the example because I go around and knock on doors. And we've got a lot of really well-educated, well-accomplished people in our district. And I knocked on the door of a guy who used to work in the oil and gas industry. And he was telling me, well, why don't you work with the Texas legislature to get us a second pipeline to the Gulf Coast refineries? Arizona only has one, and that's why our gas prices have historically been high. And I go, that's a brilliant idea. I've talked to some other people in the energy industry. This is a concrete act the state legislature can do to actually bring down the price of gasoline without relying on the federal government. Why not try it?
Alex Cologne, great idea. I also want to say the state legislature in Arizona just passed a backpack bill, which means that Arizona school funding will now follow the student to the school. It just, I don't know how much you spend per student in Arizona, but that now goes to the parent to decide. It's a voucher system. Would you have supported that had you already been elected?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I serve on the board of the Arizona School Choice Trust. I used to be a charter school teacher. My mother was a teacher. My wife teaches at Basis Scottsdale, which is one of the very best public charter schools in the country. And now I want to go further. Now we've moved the Overton window. I actually want a system of true backpack funding with funding parity, with funding that also takes into account these educational models that parents on both sides of the aisle, frankly, have discovered and some have discovered they like during the pandemic, like homeschooling or neighborhood schooling pods. I think we need, as a state government, to break the monopoly of the teachers union and allow parents to totally opt out of the educational system if they want and put their kids into an educational system that suits their family's values, suits their child's learning needs. I mean, when I was growing up, I had a learning disability. And the only reason that I got to attend one of the best colleges, one of the best law schools in the country, is because my mom, one, you know, cared enough to find a school that worked for me and then drove me, you know, for 45 minutes each way every day to that school. And that's the only reason. So I'm passionate about making sure that Arizona students have the same opportunities that I have, because I think a lot of the friction that we have in this country between races and classes and all of that is fundamentally stems from children not having opportunity.
I agree.
To heal that.
I agree.
Heal a lot.
Alex Collodin, where do people find your website? Because you're running get it on the air before we run out of time.
Oh, sure. It's alex4az.com, alexforaz.com. The primary is August 2nd. You may already have your ballot in your mailbox, or go to the polls like me on Election Day and cast your ballot.
Alex Collodin, good to talk to you. Thank you for joining me. The state reps, we got to take every state house. We got to make sure every Republican wins in every race. 9.1% inflation. I'm so blown away by that issue. I'll absorb it. I'll talk to you more about it tomorrow. I've got two more days back inside the Beltway before I get out of here again. And I will be on special report tonight, I think. Tune in, and I'll bring up to date on what we've learned. Markets are not going to like this. And I'll bring up to date on the United Kingdom's prime minister race as well tomorrow on the next Hugh Hewitt Show. Thank you, Dwayne. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Jacob.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.